It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
It's time for another edition of the Jazz Notes podcast. My name is Cleon Wall, and joining me here today, the newest Jazz Notes co-host, host, he can be whatever he wants to be. It's Ben Anderson. Ben's joined us now. He is going to be one of the guys covering the Utah Jazz this year, along with me, thank heavens, because Ben knows a lot of things. And he's been around the team a long time, so
yeah,
it's good to have him on board.
Excited to tag team this with you. It's going to be fun. Excited for a good Jazz season. It's a good time to start covering the Jazz as well. This is going to be a really good team.
Yeah, and when you think about this, it's an awesome time to be not only a Jazz fan, but for someone to cover it. I mean, when you think about it, think about the preceding years, and it's been fun. There have been some fun seasons, fun teams that we've probably been able to cover in the past, Ben, but there's just something different about this team than maybe teams gone past in years past. There just seems to be something about this team, and that includes some of the new guys too.
Yeah, I'm thinking about teams in Jazz history that were probably really exciting to watch or at least cover. And I would think that first team after Carl and John left was probably interesting, and they ended up winning a bunch of games, way more than anyone expected. But I bet that was a fun team to cover when the Jazz signed Mehmet Okur and Carlos Boozer in one summer. They actually really disappointed that next season, but then they drafted Deron Williams the year after that. I bet that team was really fun. And then you look at this team with the additions they made, Mike Conley and Bojan Bogdanovic, and you know you're just waiting for a breakout year, if you can call it that, from a guy like Donovan Mitchell, who's already averaging 20 points a game, plus Gobert coming off back-to-back Defensive Player of the Year awards. This team is as exciting as any Jazz team I think we've ever seen.
Is it fun to cover guys with great personality, too? I know that sounds like a stupid question. I'm going to say yes. It's fun to talk to guys. You already have a guy like Donovan who is fun to cover because he has such a magnanimous personality, so out there. But you talk about guys like Mike Conley. We just talked to Jeff Green on Monday. Is it fun to cover some of these guys a little bit more just because they may be able to talk a little bit more and bring a little bit more personality to the team?
First of all, they're bought in, which you can tell, and that's a good thing, and I think that's good for the team and good for the culture overall, and it ends up being very good for the fans. It is nice to not have to deal with, and it happens occasionally because it's a long season. These guys are tired, and they travel a lot, and they get asked a lot of questions that they probably feel like they've answered, but it's nice to not have guys like Ben Simmons, who will just shoot down a question or tell you asked a stupid question. It's just like everyone's there doing their job. Everyone's there trying to do the right thing and promote the team and get their coverage of the team and find the narrative. And all of these guys are willing to answer questions and make themselves available and make time. And yeah, that's absolutely more enjoyable than some of the other players around the league.
You've been in this industry for quite a long time. You've been a talk show host. You've covered the Jazz before. You've done a lot of different things. Tell us more. I know we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but just tell us more a little bit about you, how you kind of got into, you know, being a part of the Jazz family or just even covering them, because it probably started back quite a while ago, and then you've just kind of stayed in that mix the whole entire time.
Yeah, I got lucky during the lockout season 2011 that nobody knew when the league was going to start. Nobody knew there were these league meetings going on, and nobody knew when they were going to break. And finally, they agreed on a new CBA, and within a week, they wanted everyone in training camp, and the training camp was going to be 2 or 3 days, and that was going to go right into preseason games, and that ended up being in, I want to say December, maybe it was November, but I was sitting around. I had a job working at a hotel, and I saw a tweet from David Locke from the Jazz saying they needed interns immediately because the season was starting. So I applied. I got the internship, kind of fluky how it all worked out. stars ended up aligning. I ended up at 1320K Fan, now defunct, and worked there for a while and hosted a show, and then ended up over at ESPN and hosted that show for a year as well, and am very happy to be here at KSL. And actually, I've been writing for KSL since 2014. Now I'm writing for KSLSports.com exclusively, but I was at KSL.com just contributing for Deseret Media, courtesy of Josh Furlong and a bunch of names that people know here in the States. So very happy to be here. KSL has always treated me extraordinarily well, and very thankful to be here with Nate Dowdle and you, Cleon, and covering the Jazz.
And I have been one of the main hosts of the Jazz Notes podcast. I've kind of been, I'm not going to say I was the guy, but I was the guy that kind of made sure it got on all the time. Ben's going to also take over some of those responsibilities too. So there may be podcasts where you hear from Ben, you don't hear from me at all, but that's part of the experience. And lots of people follow Ben on Twitter. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, which it's at Ben Hoops, isn't it?
Ben's Hoops.
I'm sorry, at Ben's Hoops. That's where you can find him on Twitter. He's a good follow, especially during Jazz games. And you're going to find a lot of his stuff. There's stuff right now on KSLSports.com that Ben's already written up about the Utah Jazz, about Donovan Mitchell. So you'll find his stuff there. You'll find my stuff there, too. Before we get into what we expect from the Utah Jazz, at least the rest of the preseason, I wanted to get out there and say a mea culpa. I basically, in our last podcast, I said, I personally came out and I said, I'm not sure that the breakout player of the year is going to be Royce O'Neal. And then I said, I'm not sure I see him as a starter, even though two ESPN writers came out and said, don't be surprised if he's starting. And I've said, well, I'm not sure I'm going to see that. I'm going to come in here and say, I could actually see that now. Looking at this lineup and studying it a little bit more, Royce could be one of those guys who could be one of the starters. He could either play the three or the four. He could play it next to Bogdanovich. He can play next to a lot of guys. I know he can play the one through the three. Can he play the four? He probably could. So when that first game comes along, when the Jazz are playing Oklahoma City, is Royce O'Neal going to be in the starting lineup? I'm going to have to come by and say, yeah, possibly he could be in the starting lineup. He's really improved his game a lot. What do you think, Ben?
I know there's four starters that we know are going to start game one, and that's Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, Bojan Bogdanovic, and Rudy Gobert. Now, where Bojan Bogdanovic starts determines everything else.
Right.
Whether that's you start him at the four and you put Joe Ingles at the three, which I think would be the case, or you start him at the four. You could potentially bring Royce O'Neal in at the three. It depends on how well he's shooting the ball, because you want to continue to have shooting around Rudy Gobert. And that would give you a real lineup of four shooters around Gobert, which would be great spacing if you like that. But you're probably, if you're wanting shooting, you go with Ingles in that point. Otherwise, maybe you start Bojan Bogdanovic at the three, and then you put Royce at the four on offense, and then you kind of switch him defensively. So that is the case for Royce O'Neal starting. You may want to put Jeff Green out there. If the Jazz feel like they want a guy who can get out in transition and run with Donovan Mitchell, and they feel like there's an advantage there. But I suspect they want a better shooter, a more consistent shooter at the four alongside Gobert, and I would give that nod to either Ingles or Royce, and then they'll probably play Bogdanovic there on the offensive side of the ball.
In my opinion, I think the reason you'd also want Royce out there, you talked about the shooting, and that's going to be the key. How well is he shooting each and every game? Because I think what we know we're going to get out of Joe Ingles each and every game. I know he could still improve, but there's something about Joe Ingles. It's not just the shooting, it's his playmaking too. He's wonderful off the pick and roll. And I think that's why you'd want him in the starting lineup. The reason that I would think that you'd want maybe Royce in the starting lineup is possibly his defense. I think Royce is a better defender now than Joe. Joe is crafty in a lot of different ways, but Royce is a guy who could possibly guard the two, three, or four and guard them very well. I think that would be the guy. If they feel comfortable with Royce's shooting, that'd be the reason they'd say, Joe, do you mind going to the bench? And if Joe goes to the bench, I don't know, does he make that transition? I think early on I said to myself, yeah, I think Joe can do that. He's a team player. Is he that guy? What do you think, Ben? Is he that guy that could make that transition to the bench and be okay with it?
I think it's a harder jump than people recognize. Yeah. And there are guys in the NBA who have showed historically that they just struggle coming off the bench, especially once they've been starters. And a guy like that is Randy Foy, a former Jazz man who, especially as a shooter, like if he was warm and coming out of warmups and he could stay hot, he was better in the starting lineup. Coming off the bench, though, he seemed to really struggle. Now, that's not the case for everybody. Kyle Korver's come off the bench in a lot of different points in his career and has had a lot of success doing it as one of the better shooters in the league. So Joe Ingles could probably fill that role. One of the things that might be nice for the Jazz if you bring Joe Ingles off the bench is his role as an initiator of the offense, because we don't know what we're going to get from Emmanuel Mudiay. We don't know what we're going to see from Dante Exum. In fact, the Jazz don't either, and that's why they've said, we're going to ask him to play basketball. We're not going to ask him to play point guard anymore, which I think is not a vote of no confidence, but it's not exactly a ringing endorsement of what he's done as a playmaker for the Jazz. So maybe you do want to put the ball in the hands of Joe Ingles, who is probably the most creative player or one of the most creative players the Jazz have with the ball in his hands. You ask him to do a little bit of everything. He can certainly still shoot the ball. He can run the pick and roll. We saw that with Derek Favors, though he'll be missing that other piece, his role man, as Favors is in New Orleans now. Maybe that's why you use him, because he can do a little bit of everything and fill in the gaps off the bench.
And you love him also because not only can he create offense with those guys, there were many times last season that we saw, Ben, where he was... He didn't come off the bench. He was a starter, but he was with the second team. He was that guy that would initiate the offense in the second team. Now, maybe he doesn't need to do that now. But again, it's nice to have someone else there that is able to initiate the offense and be able to do things like that. Of course, Jazz preseason starting against Milwaukee, and they're going to travel to New Orleans. Jazz are, of course, going to play Derek Favors coming up on Friday night, and then they come home and they take on Sacramento. So quite a few games, different teams, too. And so my question to you, Ben, is what is it that you want to see out of this Utah Jazz team coming up in these preseason games? Because I think we know what we want to see them in the regular season, but what is it that you want to see in these preseason games leading up to that first game against Oklahoma City?
Yeah, I think the raw, obvious answer is, when does Mike Conley get on the floor? And we talked to Quinn Snyder yesterday at practice, and he said he's being held out, and that's kind of a medical decision. You have to ask the medical staff when he's going to be back on the floor. It's not like he's dealing with a major injury or anything. I just think they're trying to limit the wear and tear on his body, and he's over 30, and he's not a huge point guard, so I think that makes sense. But it is the preseason, and you use the preseason to build your chemistry up, and you don't want to be losing regular season games against teams you should be beating because Mike Conley and Rudy Gobert haven't had enough reps in live action running the pick and roll. So I want to see how quickly Mike Conley gets on the floor. As far as specifics, though, and how teams attack this Jazz team, Milwaukee and New Orleans offer two kind of somewhat similar things, which is ultra-dynamic power forwards. So the centers in Milwaukee and New Orleans are going to be Derek Favors in New Orleans, and then I think we're going to see Brook Lopez again starting for Milwaukee. Their power forwards are Giannis Antetokounmpo and the number one overall pick, Zion Williamson. Those guys are so good with the ball in their hands. They're so explosive athletically. Those are going to be the type of matchups, if Bojan Bogdanovic is playing at the four, and I don't think he can guard threes, the teams are going to look to exploit. And that's going to be really hard for the Jazz to navigate. And that's what I'm looking for coming up on Wednesday and Friday. How do the Jazz deal with that? How do the Jazz avoid that becoming a black hole or a pit where teams just burn them over and over, where if you watch teams where Enes Kanter has played over the last couple of years, they just target him in a pick and roll every single trip down the floor. Can Bojan do something to slow that down? Because if so, I think the offensive payoff of having you on the floor is enormous.
And Quinn Snyder talked about the other day, he talked about how he liked how Bojan played defense. But again, that's against Adelaide. So that's
sure.
It's going to be way different when they go up. And that's kind of my curiosity. You talked about the players are going to play against four. I'm just talking about teams with length. I know that it's not the same with Milwaukee, maybe, that you get in Philadelphia, but a team with length like Milwaukee, I'm going to be curious to see how the Jazz handle that. The Jazz have two of the smallest. If they don't have the smallest backcourt in the NBA, it's one of the smallest backcourts in the NBA. And it's something I've talked about a lot on the Jazz Notes podcast. That's going to be curious to me to see how they navigate that with Milwaukee. I'm also interested to see how they're going to handle, and it's because of what Quinn Snyder told us the other day, and that is, how are they going to handle transition defense? The Sacramento Kings, when they come into town, they're going to want to push the ball up the court. Yeah. That's just naturally what they do. And by the way, another big power forward potentially also coming to town on that day too. But this is a power forward that can run. So I think that's what I want to see. How are these guys going to handle just defense in general?
Yep.
We've heard over and over again, just keep the guy in front of you, and then you can also funnel people to Rudy Gobert. But if you play competent defense, you're probably going to be okay.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm looking for. I kind of want to see how they're going to play defense against a fast team. And also, I also want to see how they're going to handle a long team like Milwaukee. That could be something telling. But we know that the backcourt's not going to change. Just like you mentioned earlier in the podcast, the backcourt's not going to change. It's going to be Donovan Mitchell, and it's going to be Mike Conley. So that's going to be fascinating for me, too. Anything else that you're looking forward to here in the preseason?
I think you're exactly right. These two teams are going to face this week are extremely transition-driven teams, because Giannis can get out and rebound and go, and is unstoppable once he gets downhill. Is one of the best we've ever seen. Zion's going to do the same thing. Lonzo Ball in New Orleans, I know he wasn't great with the Lakers, but his ability to rebound the ball and make a pass forward to get a team started is going to put you on your heels a lot, and that's why I think the Pelicans have a chance to make the playoffs this year, in addition to all the talent they have. So those are going to be good tests for the Jazz, because a lot of teams are going to try and do that and see if they can abuse the Jazz.
You talked about transition offense. It was interesting to hear Jeff Green also say to us on Monday, the coaches told me, don't be afraid to just bring the ball up.
Yeah.
That's what's so different about this team than maybe, I mean, you go back to the John Stockton, Karl Malone years. It was rebound the ball, get it to John, and then you run the offense from there. This is totally different. I know Jazz fans are familiar with this, but do you think it's going to take some of these guys a little bit of time to kind of get used to that?
Mike Conley's come back to the ball to grab it every time. He's been on the floor since he's been in Memphis because they played that grind city, slow down style of offense. So he will come back and get the ball and bring it up the half court. Now, I mean, I'm just going to do this off the top of my head. Conley can bring the ball up. Dante Exum can bring the ball up. Moutier can bring the ball up. Donovan Mitchell, Joe Ingles, Royce O'Neal, Bojan Bogdanovic, Jeff Green. I'm missing some of guys who can rebound the ball and just run up the floor. I mean, that's, what did I name, 8 guys there just off the top of my head, and I know I'm missing a few. So that is a huge difference, and that means Mike Conley can run and stand in the corner and get open 3-point shots from the corner or run off of actions and run off of screens there in those corners that are going to be different for him, and it's probably going to be an adjustment, and some guys need to have that ball in their hand to get rhythm just in general. So I think that is a change for some players, but overall it's going to be beneficial. One little side note I'm interested to watch this year, depending on how often Dante Exum can get on the floor. That Jeff Green, Dante Exum fast break could be really interesting, even off of just missed baskets, even off made baskets. Those guys can get out and go so quickly, and Jeff Green really runs the floor as well as any Jazz big man in a very long time. Those guys could get the Jazz some easy points they just haven't been able to manufacture in a while.
Jeff Green, he's one of many guys who could be playing at the power forward this season. Do you think the majority of his time he's going to be playing at the four? That's kind of where I see him. I know he can play different positions on defense, but on offense, I think he's pretty much entrenched at the four right now. Don't know if he starts, but entrenched at the four right now.
Yeah, I think that's where he comes in. He's your top wing, perimeter wing that comes in. Now, whether that's Joe Ingles or Royce O'Neal, who comes in as more of a backcourt or initiator, those guys will step in and probably be your sixth man. But yeah, I think Jeff Green comes in and fills that other big role as what I would call your third big, even though he's not a traditional center. And then he'll get a lot of minutes alongside Ed Davis. Ed Davis is a non-ball-in-hand player, which I don't mind. He's a great offensive rebounder and great defensive rebounder. He does what you need defensively. But as far as a big guy who can touch the ball, it's got to be Jeff Green.
By the way, I loved when we were at Media Day and you asked Jeff, hey, are you used to playing the five, or have the coaches asked you to play the five? That's what you asked him. Have the coaches asked you to play the five? And he said, basically, no, but I can. And then Ed's up there and he's kind of like, what, are you trying to take my job away from me or something like that?
Don't take all my minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Real quickly, before we get out of here, you sent out a tweet the other day, or you retweeted something the other day, excuse me, and that was John Hollinger's predictions for the Jazz. There are a lot of predictions out there. You have Zach Lowe. He's come out and he said, I think the Utah Jazz are one of, I think it was 5 or 6 teams that are title contenders. When the ESPN did their power rankings, they ranked the Jazz 7th overall. He, though, had the Jazz 6th in the West and only winning 49 games. That kind of surprised me because me and my tiny little brain, and I'm not breaking down any statistics here, but I guess me right now, I'm automatically, I know the West is tough, but I guess I'm still automatically penciling the Jazz in for at least 50 to 52 games, maybe a little more if they come together in jail. Did it surprise you at all that John had him down that far at 6th in the West? Because I keep thinking they're 3rd or 4th at the worst.
Yeah, he had him winning one fewer game than he did last year. 49 wins this year, 6th in the West, as you mentioned. Denver winning the Northwest Division. Yeah, it surprises me because they made an upgrade at point guard. Mike Conley's significantly better. They got deeper in some ways, just as far as true rotation talent. Now their 7th guy, their 8th guy is a guy with playoff experience and can step on the floor more. I think they relied a lot on Kyle Korver last year, and he's just at the end of his rope. He's been in the league for so long. So I think the Jazz improved their depth, and I think they seriously improved their top overall talent, and then they improved their fit within Quinn Snyder's system, adding a guy like Bojan Bogdanovic. So they got significantly better. The other thing I would also say when we're making these predictions preseason, rest is going to play such a huge role for every team in the NBA this year, especially in the West when you look at the Clippers and you look at the Lakers. Last year, Kawhi, I know he's coming off a much more severe quad injury, but he missed, 20 regular season games. Paul George isn't going to play in October this year. We already know that. Jazz aren't going to play him at least the first time they play him, and maybe not the second time they play him, which is the beginning of November. He's going to get strategic rest throughout the year. He's not going to play 75 games.
Yeah.
I still don't think Kawhi plays 70 games this year. I think they try and rest him as much as possible because they know healthy Kawhi can win you a finals because he did it last year. LeBron always takes a month off in December. He's done it the last few years, whether it's injuries or whatever. They're going to do that. I still think you're going to allow Anthony Davis to get a little bit of rest. The Jazz can do that. and still have six or seven guys that can really play and give Mike Conley a night off or give Gobert a night off, I think you'll see that, and the Jazz are still going to be one of the deeper teams, and that's going to win you game 64 when the Clippers are sacrificing a game on the road on the second night of a back-to-back.
Yeah, I guess I'm just a little confused. Maybe there's some statistical data there where he came up with the reason why. Maybe it's just because he used to work for the Grizzlies and he's really ticked off that Mike Conley. No, I'm just teasing with you on that one. So that's going to do it for the Jazz Notes podcast. We'll have tons more podcasts. Usually at least, during the season, we're going to strive to have at least two a week. If we have more than that, that's great. We'll try to have interviews for you. We'll have you all covered for the Utah Jazz for this next season right here on the Jazz Notes podcast. Thanks for listening, downloading, and subscribing. Thanks to Ben Anderson joining us on his initial first Jazz Notes podcast. You'll hear a lot more from him coming up in the near future. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.